Good morning. So, last time, we continued talking about page tables and address spaces, and, we started by talking about, well, you know, we want to not just control whether a program can access a particular page, but we also have reasons where we want to control, I know, whether it can read or write to a particular page or execute things in a particular page. One use case for this we saw is that when we're running a program, where we have multiple instances of that program, so like a shared machine where multiple people are running a text editor, we might want to make the code read-only, so if one of those programs messes up and writes something to a crazy address, we know it's not going to affect the other instance of the program. And generally, the sort of harder implementation of this is that these are checked the same kind of way as the valid bit or a curl and only bit we talked about. So it's kind of free for the hardware to implement. It's not completely free, but it's pretty close. The hardware already has the mechanism to handle invalid pages, so we just kind of reuse that to implement these other permissions checks. Yes? Okay, so a question. So the next topic here is address space sizes. And when we talk about the size of an address space, we mean the number of possible addresses. And when we're talking about physical addresses, not all our physical addresses are going to correspond to, you know, actual memory. And one reason for this is that if I have 3 gigs of memory in my machine, there's no number of bits I can use that gives me exactly 3 gig. Right? I can have 2 gig or 4 gig. And also, our machines, like, we can typically add more memory later on or something like that. So the physical address size, when we talk about that, is the number of physical addresses, regardless of whether those are currently hooked up to actual memory. And the virtual address size, when we're talking about that, that's the number of bits that are actually used for the mapping. So the number of bits that go into the page table lookup, even though very commonly, especially on a 64-bit system, not all the things that could be mapped will be. In fact, almost all the time, a very large portion of the possible virtual addresses will be invalid for every program. So we realized that address space sizes were very large, so we had to store our page tables in memory. And we talked about the simplest way of doing this, which was an array of page table entries. And sort of the basic thing we did here is we first need to decide how to encode our page table entries, so those rows with a valid bit, our physical page number, or these permission bits, as a number, and then we just had an array of those numbers. The index into the array was our virtual page number. As you may have realized, and we'll talk about later today, this is not actually practical given our virtual address space sizes. So we're going to need to do something that's a bit more space efficient, but it's going to extend this idea by storing them in memory in a more compact way. So question.
Why is it always that you have more virtual than physical address?
So question, why is there always more virtual than physical address? So that is not always true. So an example of a system that was used to be in common use that had more physical addresses than virtual addresses are in the last days of 32-bit x86, it was common to get a 32-bit x86 machine which had more than 4 gigs of RAM that were available. And the page tables for those had more physical page number bits than they used virtual page number bits to look up a page table entry. Which means that you couldn't possibly have a page table that could access all the physical pages at a time, but that's not a problem. But most commonly these days, it's convenient to have more virtual addresses than physical addresses because, well, that gives the operating system more flexibility in how it sets up a program's memory. Yes?
So if you have more virtual addresses than physical, does that map to the same thing?
So question, if I have more virtual addresses, my virtual address size is bigger than my physical address size, does that mean some of them map to the same thing? So most commonly, it's going to be the case that a lot of them don't map to anything. A lot of them are invalid. And we're going to take advantage of that later today when we talk about storing page tables more compactly. It's also common, even when the virtual address space size isn't much larger than the physical address space size, that operating systems will set things up so there are multiple virtual addresses that map to the same physical address. That is a thing which happens on real machines, just because it might be more convenient to design OSs to do that. Okay, other questions? Yes. Okay, can I go over the difference between a page table, and a page table entry? So if we have our address space, we divide this up into pages, which are parts of that address space. So sets of addresses are the pages. And in order to indicate how, if we have our virtual address space, then it maps to a physical address space, which is also divided up into pages, we have this mapping, and this is stored as a table, and this is a page table. So that stores that mapping, which we could represent as arrows, but that's not something we can, like, we can't draw arrows in our operating system usefully. And each row of this is a page table entry, which I often abbreviate PTE. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yes?
How does the page table entry size affect how you convert between the two tables?
This question, how does the page table entry size affect how we convert between the two tables? So in this sort of picture, the page table entry size isn't relevant. But when we're dealing with an array of page table entries in memory, we have to know the size to figure out where each array element is. So if we're like looking up the second element of an array of longs, we want to look 8 bytes into the array. If we're looking at the second element of an array of ints, we want to look 4 bytes into an array. And then the page table entry size is going to come into effect in that way. So if we're looking up the page table entry for, you know, the page with index 2, we're going to do 2 times the page table entry size to get there. So if our page table entries are 1 byte, we're going to look 2 bytes after the beginning of the array. If there are 8 bytes, we're going to look 16 bytes, and so on. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So first, a logistical note. If you cannot make the final exam time, you should fill out that form really soon, or else you may have awkwardness scheduling alternate times. Cannot make usually means things like you have another final at the exact same time. Obviously, we don't expect you to take 2 finals in different rooms at the same time. Okay, and on another topic, and a little bit of a correction. So I mentioned 4 exceptions. We saved the program counter. And there's a little question about when we have something like a system call or a divide by zero, we might have different choices. So for a system call, the address that is most convenient for the processor to save is actually the address after the system call instruction, because that's the one we want to execute next. So if we have syscall and then some code afterwards, we really want to save this address. And most processors do that. They don't have to, because the OS could correct the saved address if it pointed to the syscall instruction. But most processors save that address, and some people realize that their textbook mentions this. For something like a divide by zero, so we have a divide instruction, processors will always save the address of the divide instruction, because that's what you want your debugger to point to. You don't want it to point to the instruction after the divide. The way I would think about this is we always save the address of the first instruction that's not completely executed. And generally, something we're going to do when we implement exceptions in a processor is we're going to make it so whole instructions are executed only. So if an exception happens in the middle of the divide, we'll undo any side effects of the divide. If an exception happens more notably, like in the middle of a move, or something like that, we'll undo any side effects of that. I guess a good example of this we'll see in the next slide, of an instruction where we have to be careful about making sure there's no side effects of the instruction when it fails with an exception. And this was a slight inaccuracy in last week's quiz. I believe I adjusted the key. That didn't affect many people's scores. Okay. And we're going to see an application of why we care about this. It has to do with page tables. So, we mentioned that, you know, the operating system, when we're running a program, we set up a page table for the program. And one thing that I kind of suggest we have to do is that if the program has this big stack, we often like say, oh, the stack starts at the top of memory and it grows downwards, but it's pretty big. It seems like, well, the program doesn't actually request us to add more stack. Like, we don't make a malloc call to make the stack bigger. And we know we just, like, execute push instructions and things like that, call instructions. And this seems like it creates a problem in how the OS has to assign space to the stack. And that typically, you know, we're going to plan for that you wrote a program which has this massive recursive function that uses a ton of stack space. But in practice, maybe, you know, we only use, say, 3 pages of stack. And it seems like this would require the OS to waste a lot of space. And what we'd like to do is have the OS only allocate space that you actually need. And we can, in fact, do this with the mechanisms we already learned. So what we're going to do is we're, in the OS, we're not going to actually set up this whole stack in the page table. We're going to leave it not set up. So that means that we're going to have some part of the stack which isn't allocated, which in this case is VPN 7FFFB. So it's not allocated, so it's invalid in the page table. And you might say, okay, well, that means when the program tries to use that, it's going to crash, right? Well, it's not going to crash. All the processor's going to do is trigger an exception. Now remember, the OS decides if the program crashes, because the OS needs to implement the crashing code. And the OS can do something other than crashing. So for example, in this case, if this program, we have our stack pointer pointing, you know, at the end of our last allocated page, it executes a push instruction that's going to try to write to the next page. So if we think about our pages, you know, this is where our stack pointer is, and we have this used, and this and the space above it is unallocated, and that's where push should write. So, or below it, I probably should draw this in the way I've always drawn stacks. So this is where our stack pointer is, and we're going to grow to a lower address. So this is where the push wants to write, which is not allocated yet. So that's going to be a page fault. And what we can do in the OS is we can say, well, even though this isn't valid, I know that I promised the program that I allocated a whole bunch of stack. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to now fulfill that promise by allocating this page. So I'm going to assign a physical page number to that virtual page, allocating some memory, and then I'm going to return from the exception, and the way the processor is going to set that up for me is that it's going to redo that instruction. And it's going to retry that instruction. And to make this work, something the processor needs to do is not only do we need to save the address of the push instruction, we need to make sure the push instruction isn't partially done. Most notably, the stack pointer can't be changed. And the processor is going to be required to ensure that. Another thing we're going to need that's a little more subtle is we need a way for the OS to compute the address of the page that we need to allocate. Most commonly, the processor will have a special register on a page fault which says, this is the address the program is trying to access. If we didn't have that, the OS could still figure it out, but it would involve like interpreting the instruction, which is doable but annoying and complicated. So we set that up, restart the instruction, and the program just executes normally. So from the program's perspective, it tried to use more stack space, and it worked. And the only way it would really notice anything went differently is that if it measured how fast these instructions ran, we noticed this push instruction was really slow. And this is something that OSs very commonly do. This is, in fact, for allocating all sorts of memory, OSs will commonly not actually set up the page table right away, but do it as the program tries to access things, so the program can start more quickly. And also so they don't have to allocate space that the program isn't actually using. So, questions? Yes?
Is the virtual address continuous if you have multiple programs?
Question, is the virtual address contiguous if you have multiple programs? So each program has its own page table, which is what we're showing a part of here, and its own virtual addresses, and the OS is going to track separately for each program, you know, where it told each program it put its stack. So it's going to have some data structure which, like, has says, oh, this area is stack, even though only parts of it is allocated. Yes? So question, is there any deallocation when the pop instruction happens? So the pop instruction is not going to trigger an exception because the memory is already valid. So no. So if the OS wants to deallocate space on a pop, it needs to do something a lot more complicated. Yes? Sorry? So this question is, deallocating the stack space is generally done at the end of the process? That is the where it is consistently done. When, if you take operating systems, we'll talk about ways in which the OS could reclaim the memory sooner, which sometimes OSs do. But it's not going to be triggered explicitly by like a pop instruction if it does that. Other questions? Yes. Question, where is the information about which part of the memory is the stack stored? This is something where the OS is going to have to keep information about each process anyways. So typically it will be stored alongside like the saved registers of the process and such. But it's up to the OS design how that's stored. So the OS could even do something really simple like say every program stack is going to be at this these addresses rather than storing it. Most commonly OSs will have a data structure for each process that says these are the things that are in the program's memory. Other questions? Yeah?
Is the amount of space required to stack like originally in the program or is that?
So the question is the amount of space used by the stack unique to the program? So do you mean the amount of space actually allocated?
Like originally allocated, like in the diagram that is green?
So the amount of space that's green or the amount of total space? The amount of space that's green, so that's an operating system decision. So the operating system could do something like, you know, look up something in the executable to figure out how much space to allocate. It could just choose a fixed number all the time. It could, like, look at something in how you executed the program. It really varies. The simplest possible decision is that the operating system could just not allocate any space until the program tries to use it. And we showed this for allocating space in the stack. The same principle can apply for allocating space for the executable code. We can just not load it from the file until the program tries to access it. And when we have a page fault, we say, oh, what's supposed to be there? Oh, that's emacs.exe is supposed to be loaded there. Let me do that now. And this is something that's really commonly done by OSs because, well, one thing is it makes loading programs a lot faster. That to start a program, we just set up an empty page table and run, you know, maybe load the first byte of, you know, the first page of main, and we can just load it as it runs rather than having to load the whole thing before we start it. Very commonly, OSs are designed in this way. Okay. Okay, so other questions? Yeah.
Is that not just like super slow?
Question, is this not just super slow? So there's choices the OS can make in how it does this. So one thing is it can do is that I showed for allocating a stack that you just set up one page at a time, the OS could like make a compromise where it says, you know, I'm not going to set up one page at a time, I'll do like four or something. We're kind of getting in between points. So we have lots of options when we're designing the OS to like not make it at like the naive way, which might be too slow, but still get a lot of the advantage of like not loading everything in advance.
Okay, so
and so I'll briefly mention that we can use this sort of as another sort of common motivation for virtual memory, which is called swapping, where we use, say, a disk or a hard drive or as SSD as the next level of memory of the memory hierarchy. So, you know, rather than just, you know, load things on demand, we also unload things when we run out of space and load them back. This mechanism allows us to do things like this. And this is how our textbook talks about virtual memory. They talk about virtual memory as being a way that we can actually store a program's data on disk and load it into memory on demand and unload it if we run out of space. And the mechanism for this is that we have a page fault whenever the program tries to access something that isn't loaded, and we just load it back. And this view is commonly thought of as we think of memory, main memory as a cache for disk. I don't teach it this way primarily because this is not what we want from a performance perspective on a modern OS. So OSs are still designed this way. They still kind of treat memory as a cache, but we don't actually want things going to disk a lot because disk is really, really slow these days relative to memory. This did not used to be the case when virtual memory was designed. The gap was a lot less. But this is how the OS talks about it, and these sorts of tricks are enabled because we can have a page fault and do something other than just crash the program. We can fix up the page tables, and there's lots of ways we can do that. And this is something the OS does for a lot of different reasons. And if you take operating systems, we'll learn about a whole bunch of, you know, different things the OS can do by responding to page faults or unloading or loading pages for reasons other than just the program is allocating, you know, memory or crashing. So the general sort of pattern is we make the program trigger a page fault or a protection fault deliberately. So an example we saw with allocating stack spaces, rather than, you know, having the program, you know, access stack space that isn't allocated, we just have it trigger a page fault, and then we allocate the space. It's not an error. It's not going to crash the program. Yes.
Can you explain the swapping?
Can I explain the swapping? So where did I put that?
So swapping. So the idea of swapping is that rather than allocate space in memory, we assign some space on disk, and we load that into memory when the program needs it. And if we run out of space in memory, we send stuff back to disk. So basically the idea is that, let's say program A has some data that's conceptually on disk, and we're out of space. What we might do is we might free up some space from another program by sending that data to disk. So this is a way we could run more programs that need more memory than we actually have by using disk as sort of a secondary memory. Yes?
Is this kind of a similar way to how, like, caches evict?
Question, is this in a similar way to how caches evict? Yes, it is. All the sort of concepts we see from caching apply here. So that's swapping. So swapping is, yes, this idea that we'll use disk to make up for not having enough memory for all the things the programs are using, Yeah, the reason this is not why I teach page shape of virtual memory that way, like our textbook does, is just because if that happens all the time, it's going to make your program run really slow, because accessing something off a hard drive takes on the order of 5 milliseconds, on an SSD on the order of 1 millisecond or maybe 0.5 millisecond. And we talked about that when we're like running multiple programs at once, like we typically run the program for like 10 milliseconds. So it's a huge degradation in performance if we were actually doing this all the time. So typically modern OSs, you hope that's not happening. Yes. So virtual memory is an alternative to doing swapping? No. So virtual memory is the mechanism with page tables we're learning about. The original motivation for it was to do swapping. But that's not what we're primarily using for, because it also lets us do all this stuff about running multiple programs alongside each other, allocating space on the net. All that stuff is enabled by it. But the original design had doing swapping in mind. That was the primary thing they wanted to do when they designed virtual memory and for the early systems that implemented it. Yes?
Shouldn't be the motivation also be you have to program visitors back to like an actual virtual address, otherwise there would be two programs accessing.
So the question is, you know, wasn't the motivation to also like keep isolate programs? Yes, so that was a factor. But there were earlier designs for setting up address spaces that are simpler than virtual memory that, you know, also supported that were less good for swapping. So a lot of the details of the virtual memory design, like why you have pages, is because they wanted to support swapping. And it's a good design for supporting that. So a key thing that this means is that you might think of the page table as representing your program's memory, but in most OSs, this is not the case. The page table represents what your program can access now, but sort of what's actually available to the program, like what's going to be okay for you to access without your program crashing, that's going to be represented by separate data structures the hardware does not know anything about. The operating system is going to have its own tracking of where's the stack, where's the code loaded, that it tracks, because, you know, it might not actually be in the page table yet. The OS might figure that out when a page fault happens. What do I do? So the page table only has the information the hardware needs to know for, does this cause a page fault or not? It doesn't have the information on, you know, what the OS promised to the program and it's going to ensure is there if the program tries to access it. So questions about this idea? And so one thing this means is that we need some hardware help to make this efficient. So as I mentioned, we're going to need some information about the address causing a fault to do these sort of things. We're going to need to make sure we run the faulting instruction, and we need what are called precise exceptions. So that idea that there's no side effects from the faulting instruction or after. So that push doesn't change the stack pointer when it causes an exception. So when we run it, the stack pointer is where we'd expect it to be if nothing bad happened. And that's something that the hardware is going to spend a lot of effort to make sure it works exactly right every time. Okay. So questions on page table tricks in general before we move on to talking about how we store large page tables? Yes. Can I explain the instructions we ordered after faulting aren't visible? So in this push case, we don't want it to be the case that instructions B and C have partially run, even though on an out-of-order processor, we may have started them. So we need to have our processor hide the side effects of them on an out-of-order processor. Some people tried to make processors who shouldn't do that, and it turns out that they're basically way too difficult to write a good OS for. Other questions? Okay. So let's talk about large page tables. So my desktop has 39-bit physical addresses and 48-bit virtual addresses. This is, remember, 48 bits. This is the number of bits used for the mapping. So there's 64-bit pointers, but 16 of those bits don't actually get used to look up a page table entry. And 4,096-byte pages. So if we had page table entries organized the way we've seen before, how many page table entries are there? Yes? Question why the top 16 bits aren't used. So to make the page table lookup not so ridiculous, Intel and or AMD decided that the way our virtual addresses are going to work are that we're going to have our addresses are going to start with a bunch of ones or a bunch of zeros, and only the last 48 bits actually go into the page table lookup. So that's just because they wanted the pointers to be a power of two size, but they didn't actually want the page tables to be that big. Yes? Sorry? Question, does that mean that only 32 bits are used for virtual addresses? I should say this is of 64-bit addresses. So 48 bits are used for virtual address lookup, but we have 64-bit pointers. Yes?
So what assumption should we make, like, on tests? Like, if it says 64, like, should we assume?
So if I tell you that we have X bit virtual addresses, you should assume all those X bits are used to do a page table lookup. So question, how many page table entries does this mean we'd have if we had page tables laid out like we've seen? Which is not how they are, as we'll discuss, as will be obvious when we look at the answer to this. So, and then how large are our physical page numbers? Okay, so do I have anyone need more time? So any answers for our first part? Yeah.
2 to the 36.
And how did you get that?
12 bits for offset, so you have 36 bits for virtual page.
PN, so 36 bits virtual address, virtual page number, because we have our 48-bit virtual address, and 12 bits are the page offset, so our virtual page number.
is 36 bits, and we need to have an entry for each of them if page tables were laid out like we've seen. So that's 2 to the 36. How about for the second part? How large are our physical page numbers? Anyone? Yes. 27 bits. How did you get that? Okay, so 39 bits of physical address minus 12 bits for a page offset. So that's what I get. Should realize we're destroying. So if we actually look at how page tables on my system are laid out, page table entries are 8 bytes. So not even 4, 8. You might think they could fit in 4, but they decided that they wanted more bits for metadata and the like and room for future expansion. So if we do the calculation of 8-byte page table entries times 2 to the 36 entries, that's 2 to the 39 bytes, which is 512 gigabytes. So we can't lay out page tables like we've seen before. We can't have them be a big array. And there's just no way I can possibly store this. And remember that this is for each program, too. So if I'm running 3 processes, I need 3 times that. So obviously, we're going to have to lay out page tables in a different way, and we'll talk about what that is. Yes? So entries are 8 bytes. The reason I knew this is I looked it up in the processor manual. So there's no way you could have figured this out from the other information. So I'm just telling you the entries are 8 bytes because I looked it up just like I looked up that the physical address size was 39 bits.
And why are we using 512 gigabytes?
So the question is, why is it 512 gigabytes? If I'm storing it as an array, I have 2 to the 36 entries times 8 bytes per entry. Gives me 2 to the 39 bytes, which is 512 gigabytes. Yes? Yes, so we can't store this as an array because it's just way too big. So our question is going to be, how can we save space? Like, how are we not going to store that much space? And the big way we're going to do that is that if we look at a typical process, most pages are invalid. So our solution is that we're not going to store most of the invalid pages. Or page table entries for most of the invalid pages. So I should be more precise. So to do this, we can't use a flat array. Because a flat array, we have to store entries for everything. So we're going to use some data structure where we don't store every single entry. And basically, we want to map from where the keys are our virtual page numbers and the values are our page table entries. And the map's just not going to have entries for at least many of the invalid page table entries. And usually, if I ask you, how should you do this, you'll remember 2150 or similar courses and say, oh, we learned about hash tables. Hash tables are great. Let's use a hash table. And that is a good idea. And this is something that real processors have done. It commonly goes under the very confusing name, inverted page tables. So there are real processors which to do this. It's not common. The solution that we're going to talk about and that almost all processors you've used have implemented is a tree-like data structure. So it's not going to be a search tree that you've seen, but it's going to be a tree-like data structure, and that's how we're going to save space. Is that because of this tree-like data structure, we're not going to be storing large numbers of entries for those holes. So what's this tree-like data structure going to look like? Well, to think about how it's designed, we need to think about sort of how the lookup's going to happen. And this lookup needs to happen in hardware. So it's going to be important that this lookup is simple. And also, we want the lookup to not involve many memory accesses. And this second constraint is going to mean that this is going to be a little different than the sort of trees you may have implemented for, like, a balanced binary tree.
And in particular, we're not going to make a binary tree. We're not even going to make like a 2-3 tree, if you've seen those or something like that. We're going to make a tree where we have a very wide fan out, so the depth of the tree is very small. And that's so we don't have to do lots of memory accesses. If we did a binary tree, you know, we'd have to do like 10, 20 memory accesses, and that would be a real problem. So we're going to have a really fat tree. And to show what that looks like, here I have an example where I'm going to have a two-level tree. In practice, the number of levels will vary, but I'm starting with two levels because it fits on my slide. And what we can do is we can have our first level, our root, we'll call the first level page table. And it's going to have pointers to children. And we're going to have one child page table for each segment of addresses. And we're just going to divide up the addresses into chunks to do that. So in this case, I have a 16-bit virtual page number. And therefore, I decided to divide it up into two 8-bit chunks. I use the first 8-bit chunk to look up in the first level, which means that the first 256 pages, we use the first entry in the first level table. The second 256 pages, we use the second entry, and so on. And after I look up my entry here, I have to go to the second level table to get the specific entry for the exact number. So if I'm looking up the entry for 03, I say, look at my first level table, I say, oh, I need to go to the first entry here, and then I'm not done, I need to go to the second level table and find the PTE for 03 here. If I'm looking up 300303, I say, oh, in the first level, that gets me to the fourth entry, that tells me where the actual individual entries for that range is, that range from 300 to 3FF, and I look up in the second table, I find there where the second entry is. Now, the reason that this is not going to use a ton of space is that when we have big holes, the first level just has an invalid entry. And if we try to look up, you know, page with virtual page number 100 or 102 or 103, we're going to look there and say, oh, it's invalid. I'm done. It's a page fault. And we can stop. So we don't actually have to represent those big ranges at all. So questions about this two-level structure. So you see I've just divided up all my virtual page numbers into these chunks. I sort of look at the, you know, top-level division first, then I find a table which gets me the details of that, assuming anything in the whole range is valid. If nothing in the range is valid, I just don't have a second table. So questions about this? Yes. So this is a tree of arrays. So this is a tree where each level of the tree, rather than having like a left or right child, we have a first through 256th child. So if we think about this as like, if I draw this more like a tree, we have each level has 256 branches going down. Yes. So the question is, if we start a program where nothing's valid, do we have all these branches? So no, the OS can just like allocate a table where everything is invalid here. Now, in practice, probably OS will allocate something like for exception handlers, but yeah. And typically, you know, most of these entries will be invalid because we have big holes. Like if you think of a typical program, you have like 4 meg of memory allocated. So almost all these entries will end up being invalid, therefore. Yes?
So if we didn't have the first level, we just have the second level, would that essentially be the same thing that we did with the arrays?
So question, if we only had the second level, would that be the same thing we did with the arrays? Yes. So if we like put all the second levels together and they were all populated, that would be the same as our single level array. So what we've done is so another way of looking at this is we've divided our single level array into chunks, and we have pointers to the chunks that we've actually populated in this first level.
Okay.
Yes.
The
question is, the second level going to be non-contiguous in memory? It absolutely can be, and probably will end up being so in most devices. Or, I mean, each of these tables needs to be contiguous, because each of this is an array, but the two parts of the second level are not likely to be stored next to each other. Yes? So the question is, what does this arrow indicate? So these arrows indicate pointers. So if we look at our first level, we're going to have our page table entries we've seen before, which are going to have permission bits and a physical page number. So the arrow means that the physical page number is the physical page number where that second level table is stored. So it's a pointer. So it's saying that we have a pointer to that table here. Typically, the pointer is going to be stored as a physical page number rather than a byte address, just so we have one page table entry format. Yes? So the question, does the physical page number actually get stored in the second level? So the physical page number here is the page number of the next page table. It's not the page number the program is going to access. So this, so the address we look up in the first level, it's an address, it's a physical address, but it doesn't actually tell us where any of the program stuff is, it just tells us where we can find pointers to the program stuff. So then when we look up in the second level, then we'll actually get the physical page number of the program's data, or code. Yes?
So like that address in the first
Level,
that page is actually the address of the next level.
So the address in the first level page table is the address of the next level page table? Yes. Yes? So the question is, when I use the physical address in the first level, how do I apply that in the next level to get the physical address? So what we're going to end up doing, I guess we can just proceed on to this slide, is that we're going to split our virtual page number into two parts. So the way we kind of saw this here is that the first part of our virtual page number told us which row we were in the first level table, and the second part told us which row in the second level table. So note that this second level table here, it starts for BPN 300 because this was pointed to by here. So it doesn't start at BPN 0, but our last bits of the BPN start at 0 because we just divided up our virtual page number into the index for the first level, index for the second level. And that's what's going to make this lookup simple in hardware. Right, we want it to be easy to implement in hardware, so we're just going to divide it up into two pieces. The first piece tells us the first level lookup, second piece tells us the second level lookup. And we do that same array lookup, but with these pieces of the virtual page number. Yes? Question, are they going to be of equal sizes always? That is not required, but typically processors try to do that. So we do an array lookup using each of these pieces, just the same kind of array lookup we've seen for when it was a flat table. We just do it twice. So we get the first one, and we get a page table entry. And rather than using that page table entry to make our final physical address, we use it to get the address of the second page table. And we do another array lookup with that second level index. So we just divide up our virtual page number into a first index and a second index. And then we finally get our last level page table entry. And we check if it's valid and so on. And we get our physical page number for our actual program's address, which we use with the page offset to actually access the program's memory. And note that at each step, we actually have to check the valid bits and the permission bits. So each step is the same as the single level lookup we've seen, except what we do with the physical page number we get out. And the everything but the last step, we use it just to start the next step instead of our page table base register. And the last step, we use it to actually form our final physical address. You have a question here? Question, why am I multiplying by the page size here? This is because the PTE has a page number. Page number, but the cache expects a byte address. Question? Question, what I use the physical address I got from the first level page table for, it tells me where the second level page table is. So if we look at our diagram here, right, this pointer here, that is the physical address in the first level table, is the pointer to the second level table. Yes? So the question is, I add on to this the base address. So this pointer, if we look at our process here, this lookup here, this is the effective base address for the second level table. So that came from the first level table. Does that answer your question? Yes. Question is, what is the virtual page number in the second level page table? So we have our overall virtual page number, which is this. So this is our VPN. And we divide it up, in this case, into two parts. The first part we use for the first level. The second part we use for the second level. So the second part of that virtual page number is what we use for the second level lookup, in this case. Okay. Other questions? Yes. So question, are the two tables stored contiguous in memory? So because we're doing it based an array lookup for each table, each of the tables are contiguous, but the two tables could be separated in memory, but internally, you know, they're just an array. So they're contiguous in that sense. But there could be two arrays that are stored at completely different physical addresses, and commonly they will be. Yes? Question, how do they determine their 256 children? So in this example, I knew that because of how big these ranges of virtual page numbers were. So in this case, I had a 16-bit virtual page number, and I split it up into two 8-bit pieces. So with real processors, we'll have a different size virtual page number, and therefore different size pieces. And it's going to vary between processor to processor. That's your question? Other questions? Yes. Question, is the pointer always to the first element? Yes. And generally, the pointer is a page number, so that means that the second level tables need to start at the beginning of a page. Okay. Other questions? So we have our page table lookup. We have a first level page table lookup and a second level page table lookup, like so. So this is sort of the mechanical process which happens. We look up our first level. We use that as the base address for our second level table, and so on. Another way we can visualize this is that we have our virtual address. We divide up the virtual page number into two parts. We use the first part to do an array lookup. We have a first level table. We look up a place, an entry in that array, which points to the beginning of a second level table. We use the second part to do an array lookup in that, which points to the beginning of a physical page, and we use the page offset to do a lookup in that to find the actual program's data that it's trying to access. Yes? So the question is, to do the second level lookup, we take the physical address we get from the first part, yes, and we add the second part of the VPN times the page table entry size? Yes, exactly. Question, what is split PTE parts on this diagram? So here we have to extract the page number and the valid and so on bits. And that's what that's representing. So depending on what the page table format, entry format is. Yes? Question, I said that pointers to the second level page table stores page numbers? Yes. So question, does the first index page level page table have to store the base index of the second level tables? Yes. And it stores them as page numbers, not byte numbers. Which means that the second level tables have to start at the beginning of a page because that's the only thing we can represent in the first level table. So it has to start at the beginning of page 0, 1, 2, 3, but we can't like say halfway through page 0 like we could with a byte pointer. Does that answer your question? Or follow up? Other question? Yes.
Does that mean the second level has like an address that represents a whole page?
Question, does that mean the second level has an address that represents a whole page? Yes. So that's the addresses we're going to have in our first level table. It's going to always represent a whole page. And generally, the whole page will be used to store the second level page table or possibly more than a whole page. But we'll have the whole page where the page table starts. Yes?
After we get the base from the first level, why do we have to time it by the page
size? Question, what is this multiplication by the page size for? So our first level stores a page number, but our cache expects a byte number. And we need to use a byte number like to have consistent units. Like if we're looking at the units here, this is in pages. This number here is in bytes. Those don't agree. We need to make them agree to add. So I convert everything to number of bytes rather than a number of pages. Other questions? So, yeah, a way of looking at it. I guess this is a confusion. So this is a page number, and here is a byte number, and we need to have two byte numbers, so we add them together. We can't, if we add a page number and a number of bytes, you know, that doesn't quite work. We need to have the same units. Yes.
If you have, when it multiplies by the page size, is that at the first level or second?
So the question, when you multiply by the page size, is that the first level or second level? So this was how we took our page number from the first level and turned it into something equivalent to the page table base register. So I should use a different color. So this page table base register here for the first level, we have something that looks very similar for the second level after we multiply by the page size. But if we don't multiply by the page size, we just have the different units. Does that answer your question? So question, why don't we store our physical addresses as byte numbers?
Yes.
Because then we'd have to have two page table entry formats. We'd have to have one for the last level and one for the earlier levels, which we could do, but that's typically not how processors are designed. Typically, they want to have the formats be very similar. So they only store page numbers in both. Other questions? Okay, so we have these multi-level page tables. We split the virtual page number into pieces for each level of the table. The top levels point to the next page table, usually just using a physical page number of the next page table rather than sort of an exact address, meaning that the exact address has to be at the beginning of a page. And the bottom level, the page table entry points to destination page, and remember, we have to do the checks for, is it valid, is it readable, is it writable at each level. So we're going to do that every step along the way. So if we go back to my desktop, I mentioned we had a 48-bit virtual address, and 12-bit page offset. So we have a 36-bit virtual page number. We determined that earlier. And what the processor designers chose to do is they split it into not just two parts, but four parts. So it's split into four 9-bit parts. And the page tables at each of the four levels, therefore, so we don't just have two, we have four, are 2 to the 9 entries, and page table entries are 8 bytes. And this is a deliberate choice, because if you do the math here, we have 2 to the 9 times 8 is 2 to the 12. Page tables at each level are exactly 1 page. That's a deliberate design decision to make things simpler. And that's a very common design decision, though not all processors have to do that. So questions about what this splitting looks like. So on my laptop or desktop, you know, the page table lookup is going to be the same process, but we're going to have 3 steps before we get to that final last level lookup and we actually find it as a page number. Yes? So the question is, each page table is 2 to the 12 bytes? Yes. So each page table takes exactly 1 page, and generally will be allocated as a whole page. Like, it won't be split across, it might be like half of 1 page and half of another, will be just 1 page every time. And the processor makes that choice partly because it makes it a lot more convenient for the operating system to allocate space for page tables, because it just can allocate, any time it allocates memory, just 1 page at a time. Other questions? Yeah.
Is it a coincidence that you have 48-bit bits like that and you have 12-bit offset?
So the question is the 48-bit and the coincidence. So I believe that the processor designers chose 48 bits primarily to make this decision here work. So they just said, We want to have it split up into even number of parts. Let's choose a size that does that. And if you look at, you know, proposals for extensions, they usually try to keep that. But so I believe like there's talk of like a future version of x86-64 having 5-level page tables, where they like add another 9 bits to the virtual address. Because that's the usually what they want to do. Though not always. But often the virtual address sizes will be set up because of how they split up into page tables at each level. Does that answer your question? Other question?
Yeah, and is it generally like useful, like required, to have 5-12 times more virtual address than physical address? Because you have 48
data. The question is there any logic to how much bigger the virtual addresses are than the physical addresses? No, that just... there's reasons for that, but they're not related to the page table organization. So a note. So here, I've been careful to note that we divide the virtual page number into parts. Our textbook's diagrams are not so careful, and this confuses people. So our textbook says VPN 1, VPN 2. These are VPN part 1, VPN part 2. They are not two virtual page numbers. There is one virtual page number that we divide up into pieces. Okay, so let's do a little exercise. We'll do 32-bit x86, has 2-level page tables. And in its design, we have 2 to the 12 byte pages, so 12-bit page offset, and we have 2-level page tables, where each page table takes up 1 page, and there are 4-byte page table entries. So question is, how is this address split up? So first thing we want to find out is, how big is each page table? So entries, so how many entries per page table? So that's the first thing you should figure out. That will help you figure out how to split up that address into our VPN part one, VPN part two, and a page offset. Okay, so who would like more time to figure out how many entries we have in each page table? Okay, so who can give me an answer? How many entries do we have in one of these page tables? We have page tables at each level. How many entries does each of them have? Anyone? Yeah. So 2 to the 10, how did you get that?
Because you have 20, and 2 to the 12 bytes.
Okay. So 2 to the 12 bytes.
And you have 4 byte table, page table entry.
So divided by 4 bytes for a page table entry, which gives us 2 to the 10 entries. So we have 2 to the 10 entries per table. So that's one way we could have figured it out. And if we have 2 to the 10 entries per table, how many bits do we need to know which of those 2 to the 10 entries we're referring to? 10. Just like if we had, you know, 2 to the 2 entries, we need 2 bits to say which of the 4. With 2 to the 10, we need 10 bits to say which of the 2 to the 10 we're referring to. So each of the VPN parts is 10 bits. Now, this is not the only way we could have figured out the size of the VPN parts. So another thing we could have said is, oh, our virtual address is 32 bits. 12 bits of that are the page offset. There's 20 bits left for the virtual page number. And we know that page tables at each level are the same size. So we have to divide that virtual page number up evenly because the page tables are the same size. So each of the parts are 10 bits. So that's another way we could figure it out, that there's actually redundant information in this question. So either way, we find out that our address is divided up into... VPN part 1 and 2, each 10 bits, and then a 12-bit page offset. So questions? Yes.
Which part of the question is redundant?
So the information that each page table is one page, you didn't actually need, because you could have figured it out from the page tables just being the same size. All the page tables at each level being the same size. That's all you actually need to know. Or alternately, if I just told you the first level table was one page, you could have figured it out from that, or similarly. Other questions? Okay, so given that, we need to split up the address, and I've sort of drawn the diagram here. So the last bits are page offset. Then we have our two VPN parts. So VPN part 1 is going to be for the first level lookup. So we'll go to index x48 in the first level table, and then we'll find a second level table with that and go to index 345 in the second level table using that. So questions about this problem? Okay, so let's do an exercise where we do the full translation. So we saw this with one level. Let's do it with two levels. So here I have 9-bit virtual addresses and 8-byte pages, which means that my virtual addresses, I have 8-byte pages, so I have a 3-bit page offset and a 6-bit virtual page number. But that 6 bits is going to be set up into multiple levels because we have a multi-level page lookup. And I know my pages are 8 bytes, so that with 1-byte page table entry, so I have 2 to the 3 entries per level for a page table, which means that I'm going to need 3 bits for each VPN part. Just like we saw 10 bits before, when I had 2 to the 10 entries per level, here I have 2 to the 3. So my virtual page number is divided up into 3-bit parts. And given that, the question is, translate this virtual address. So the first step is going to be to do the first level lookup. So to do that, we need to figure out what's the first part of the virtual page number. Someone help me with that. So how do I split this address up into our virtual page number part 1, part 2, and page offset? And because it's going to help me in a bit, I'm going to write out this address in binary. So what's our first part of the virtual page number? Yes. 100. So we have our virtual page number part 1, part 2, and our page offset at the end. Okay. So that's our first part of our virtual page number. So I guess for sake of time, I'll probably just go through this. So what we're going to do with that, we're going to take our first part of the virtual page number. That's 100. That is 4. So I'm going to look at my page table base pointer points here. So that's the beginning of my page table. My page table index 0 is here. 1, 2, 3, 4. So the page table entry I want at the first level is D4. I just looked at my first virtual page number part one, went to that index in the table. It happened that things in my table are 1 byte, so I just advanced that many bytes. And now I need to decode that as a page table entry, and I find out that it's physical page number 110, and it's valid. So the valid is okay, so I go on to the next level. So what's the next level lookup going to be? Well, I need to use the second VPN part, which is here. So I'm going to take the second VPN part and do the lookup. So the way this is going to work is I have a physical page number, but that doesn't give me the address, right? Because that's a page number, that's not an address. So I need to go to that physical page, and this is 6. So I want to go to physical page 6. If we look at our physical pages, this is physical page 0, 1, 2, 3. I'm just counting off 8-byte segments. Those are our pages. 4, 5, 6. I could have also figured this out by writing out page number and a page offset of 0. So that's how I got 1110000. I just set a page offset of 0. That's the beginning of that page, which gives me page address 30 is the beginning of this page. And I need to add this index from here. And that's how I get my second level page table entry. And from there, I do combine it with my page offset, and we will go over this next time. So I'm over time, I know, sorry. So we'll stop here.